Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Kurt Weaver. Welcome, Kurt. It's great to have you with me.
Oh, this is fun, Gloria. I'm glad to be here.
Indeed. We need to begin by saying that Kurt is one of the pastors at Portland Mennonite. He is the pastor of children and youth and has been at Portland Mennonite for how long?
I think it's been about 12 years, since 2009.
And the other thing is that Kurt was one of the people who first came up with this idea of having a podcast for Portland Mennonite. I came up with the name, but you came up with the concept. Tell everyone a little bit about how that all happened and why.
Well, I can't really take a lot of credit here because I think Matt Newell Ching sent an email to someone at PMC, one of the staff, and said, hey, you know, we're going through this weird thing. I think there's probably stories there. And I thought of you right away with what you do. And the important thing is, in the whole evolution of COVID Chronicles, is that when I called you, there was absolutely zero hesitation, and you were so excited, and so you made this whole thing happen without a whole lot of effort on our end at all. We just sort of helped you with the technical pieces of it, and you went off and running, and it's been such a blessing. A lot of people have really loved it.
And I've been telling people that basically COVID Chronicles saved my life during the beginning part of the pandemic because it allowed me to do what I love and to realize that I could do it over Zoom. And so thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So now we're going to do what we do, and that is start at the beginning. And I know you are not a native Oregonian. Kurt, tell us where life started for you.
No, I am not a native Oregonian. I always tell the story that I married a native Oregonian, and when you marry a native Oregonian, you end up in Oregon. So that's how that worked out. But no, I grew up in Pennsylvania. If you go all the way back, I'm a pastor's kid. And so my mom and dad were pastors, sort of in like this weird mission mode of Lancaster Conference back in, you know, this is a long time ago, and ended up in Reading, Pennsylvania. So I was born around Reading, Pennsylvania, where my parents were pastoring in a church there, South 7th Street, and was there for 10 years, I think until I was 10 years old. And so if I keep going, after 10 years old, we ended up at a camp. My dad was a camp administrator at Camp Hebron, which is about an hour away from Lancaster County, if you know that area. And it serves sort of a lot of the churches in Lancaster County. And we were there for eight some years. And so a lot of my childhood is connected to being a camp kid and being at Camp Hebron, which was a really wonderful childhood. So that's kind of where it started. And then there's more to the story, but that's where it started.
How many siblings and where do you fit in the family?
Well, I'm the youngest, and I have four older sisters. And I'm also not only the youngest, I think there's, four or five years between me and my next oldest sister. So they were all kind of born in a row, but I have been assured that I was not an accident.
I would probably say that they really, really wanted you because they were going to give it one last shot at getting a boy, maybe?
Oh, well, maybe that is true. I don't know. That's the story that was told to me, yes.
As a family of three girls and a younger brother, I can attest to the fact that we all wanted that younger brother. So my question for you is, did you ever wish that you had a brother?
Oh, yeah, I think I probably did in some ways, and not by any fault of just the way our family was sort of made up. In many ways, I grew up kind of as an only child because being 4 or 5 years younger than my next sister, they were, especially when I got into the high school age, a lot of them were gone by the time I went through my teen years. So So yeah, during those years, I think I would have enjoyed a brother. Now, the thing is that I had, growing up at a camp, you kind of grow up in this little pseudo family environment. Like, you know, the staff of the camp, the people who work there year long become kind of an extended family. And there was always sort of some guys that were usually older than me, but really did fill that big brother role for me growing up.
So growing up in a camp sounds like an idyllic kind of childhood. And I'm sure there are many, many stories, but can you just give us some examples of what was wonderful about growing up at a camp and maybe one or two ideas of things that weren't all that wonderful?
Well, yeah, I often look at my own children. We have two children, and I wish they could have some of the experiences that I had growing up at camp. I don't think that it was a lot different maybe than what kids who grew up on farms maybe experience a little bit, but we had horses and there was, you know, a lake and lots of hiking trails. I was allowed to have a mini bike. It was during an era when the camp was pretty lax. It was before insurance stuff really clamped down on camps. And so, I had a mini bike and there was a golf cart that I could run around in. And I had free access to, I would sometimes come home from school and be able to saddle up a horse and go for a ride by myself. So I've learned later that some of my friends from school assumed that we were extremely wealthy because I would tell stories of kayaking on my lake and riding horses, and the camp was 350 acres. And, you know, so the perception, I think, from my friends at school were that I was really, really wealthy. and they had no idea my dad was working for next to nothing and we were living in staff housing.
And you did not disavow them of that thought that you were wealthy?
No, it was always fun to bring friends from school home. It didn't happen a lot, but yeah, to introduce them to because I had sort of, you know, the secret keys to everything. So if they came home after school, I would say, hey, let's go up here. There's a craft hut we can go in, or there's, you know, it was just this total life that was fascinating for my friends because, you know, this was during a school year or something when there wasn't any kids at the camp. And so it just was this huge place with big buildings and it was fun to go explore.
Did you pretty much have free rein to go wherever you wanted to go on that piece of land?
I did. And I can lay down and close my eyes and vividly still see like landscapes because I spent so much time just on trails and hiking around, finding very unique little corners and crevices of that property. I just knew that property like the back of my hand at that age because I was always running around.
Is it safe to say that your parents didn't always know exactly where you were?
Yeah, I would say that is safe. There was sort of I did have my bedroom was in the same part of the house as where my parents' bedroom was. So I think they probably checked it. I don't know at some point, but I took to well, this is kind of an interesting story. Is that by the time I got into like high school, I would pitch a tent behind my house. And I ran an electric, like a cord out of my window into the tent. And basically I lived in that tent all summer long. And it was like a fort. And we had a big collie dog and the dog slept in there with me. I'm sure it wasn't very hygienic in there, but the secret is that living in that tent gave me complete freedom. I could be out as late as I wanted because nobody was checking on me. And I was sort of like, yeah, I was a free range kid for sure during those summers.
Were there ever any scary incidents?
Growing up at a camp?
Yeah, for you. Like, did you ever feel unsafe or something happened and you were like, oh dear, maybe that was a little risky?
Huh. I don't have any big moment that sticks out that was an unsafe or scary thing. What I think is interesting is as a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, I would walk without a flashlight through pitch dark woods and have no fears because I kind of knew my way. And it was very common for me to just be out in the woods in the middle of the night. So yeah, I didn't have any of the fears. And I can remember that because the kids from the city would come and we would be walking back from maybe a Vespers night or something back to the cabins. And I would be among the other kids about my age and they were terrified. And I was never that terrified. You know, it was just completely at home in that environment.
And say during the summertime when there were campers there, did you have specific responsibilities? I don't know if you'd call it a job or not, or what was that like?
Yeah, I had fun. My parents were pretty good at when, by the time I was old enough, you know, early high school age, like way before I would have had a driver's license, I was allowed to drive the tractors and stuff around in the camp, just like a kind of a farm kid would. And so I worked with a maintenance crew, and my dad kind of expected me to, there were these, I forget what it was $50 a month or something that he put out in front of me as like this amount of money I could earn. But it meant that I had to work every day to do some specific tasks. And one of them was running the trash trailer all through the camp and picking up all of the trash and then taking it to the dump. So that was my big task every day, was to pick up garbage in the morning. And that meant going to all the different buildings, going down through the campgrounds, emptying out all of the cans. You know, we had these big metal trash cans. And so it took a while to make a run through the whole camp to get all the trash. And we did it, I think we did it every day. But it was me and a couple other buddies that did it. They were all just a little bit older than me. And we made it into a game. We see how fast we could do it. We would let the tractor idle down this road and both of us be running to pick up cans and dumping them while the tractor just, you know, have to run back and readjust so it doesn't hit a tree. But I mean, that was the kind of, we had figured out how to do it as efficiently as possible. The memory I have of all of that is we got into this bad habit of seeing how fast we could do it to beat our time. And part of it was, we learned that on the road back to the dump, there was like a big hole in the ground. Now, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that anymore, but there's a big hole in the ground. It was a tilt trailer. We would light that thing on fire on the way back the road because that way it was faster. You know, like we would light it on fire and then back it up against the ditch and then pull the pin and all this burning garbage would go down in and then we didn't have to crawl down in and light it. So that would save us some time. But I do remember getting in trouble. We lit it too early one time and we burned half the trailer up. So good memories.
Now, was your father the camp director or just the camp pastor or both?
He was like the director. Yeah, he was the main director of the camp. And then they would always hire like a program director for the summer that ran the actual programs of the camp, but he was the main. And my mom, back in those days, the way the church hired people to do these kinds of things is they would hire my dad for not that much money. And then they expected mom to come along as an extra employee, and she never got paid, but she worked full time in the kitchen the whole time we were there. She's a little bitter about that now.
Did she have a specialty in terms of food or desserts or anything that was kind of her thing in the kitchen?
Oh, I don't know. It was camp food, you know, like burgers and sloppy joes. But I have very clear memories of being, you know, I don't know, 13 or 14 and standing next to her and helping her. We had this huge griddle and making pancakes in the morning for whatever, 200 kids. And she would let me help. She had this like thing that squeezed out the batter. And my job was to put the pancakes on the griddle. Yeah. So it was very informal. I don't think any of that is like that anymore. I think it's much more professionalized now. And the, you know, probably wouldn't allow a little kid to be in the kitchen making pancakes.
But you did have to go to school during the school year. I'm assuming it was a public school. What was the name of it? How far away?
Halifax Area High School, middle school and high school in Halifax, Pennsylvania. So very small little kind of mountain town. But I have good memories of going to school there. I went to school there I don't know if I'm going to get this exactly right, but I think it was fourth grade through 10th grade. And then in the summer of my 10th grade year, my dad said, all my sisters had gone to Lancaster Mennonite High School, which was at least an hour away from the camp. And there was a dorm there. And he said, do you have any interest in going to Lancaster Mennonite High School? And I said, yes, because a lot of the kids that I knew that came to the camp in the summer, I knew went to that school. So he made arrangements. And so my junior and senior year, I actually was a dorm student. So I lived down at the school for the school year. And because it was far enough away, I had some friends that I actually, there were like long stretches where I didn't come home. I didn't even come home on all of the weekends because I had friends down there that I just went to their house in the weekends.
But it was your decision to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was given the option to go to Lancaster Mennonite High School. And I remember it being a really positive thing. At the end of my sophomore year at this public school in this little rural town, I can remember part of the decision being, I was starting to struggle with some of the stuff that some of my friends were kind of getting into with like alcohol and stuff like that. And not knowing, I was a little innocent Mennonite kid and I didn't know exactly what to do with all of that stuff. And I think I might have talked to my dad about it. And then that's when he really looked into this. I look back now and think, well, in some ways, I wish I would have been forced to deal with those issues and I would have probably learned something. But going to Lancaster Mennonite High School had a lot of pros, and it was a much better school, a bigger school and much better school. So, and I played sports there and stuff. So it was a good move for me to go.
So academically, as you're getting up through junior high and high school, was there anything starting to become clear in terms of what you might possibly want to do as a career or what next steps might be? How was that working out, or what was your thinking?
Well, I'm watching not only, well, I have a high school senior, my son's a high school senior, but I'm working with youth at the church. I watch a lot of kids in this phase of their life trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And I have a lot of compassion for it because I had no idea, you know, what I was going to do. And basically, when I ended high school without thinking I was going to go to college. I'm not sure why, but I just didn't think I was going to go to college. And my parents weren't pushing me that hard to go to college. So I stayed out a year and I worked and was trying to buy a car and do all these things. I think if I remember right, I was putting in about 70 hours a week.
Where were you working? At the camp still? Or
no, I was like basically had left home. I was living in a friend's basement down in near Ephrata, Pennsylvania, and bagging groceries part-time, working at a deli, like a meat and cheese deli in Reading, Pennsylvania, that was just on the weekends. It was these long 13-hour days. And then I also worked at a place called Friendship Community, which was for sort of mentally challenged adults. And I was there, I was there like weekend staff. I was just supposed to be there to be there overnight. So I slept in an office in there. So anyway, but it was a lot. I had no time off. And after that 1 year of being like that, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I wanted to go to college so bad. Yeah.
In high school, were there specific subjects that were standouts for you, things that you were enjoying or you were really good at that might possibly have been helpful?
I was always better at anything that I could write an essay. I was fine. If you asked me to add things up and give you an exact answer, I struggled. So I was better at anything that had to do with like concepts and stuff like that, and ideas and whatever, but math and stuff wasn't my strong point. I can remember going into college the first year, I didn't have a major declared. And I ended up at what was EMC in those days, Eastern Mennonite College. And they had a brand new major called Camping Rec and Youth Ministries, I think it was called. Camping Recreation Youth Ministries, something like that. But the acronym was CRIME. So that's what I remember. So anyway. But, you know, it was like one of those things when I read through the major, I was like, this is my life. I mean, I know this stuff. You know, my dad was a pastor, so I felt like I had this whole sort of church environment and the camp environment. And I had been a camp counselor by that time, like at least 3 summers. And so it just was a major that seemed to fit me. And so that was that. I was a psych minor, I guess. But yeah, that's what took me down this road. And it was a very natural thing for me to do because it's what I knew. But it wasn't until much later in life, actually, that the desire to go to seminary became very strong. And I always sort of link that desire to go to seminary to something that my dad either said, or I think he said it, at least it's something I took from him, which is for him, being a pastor, he put a lot of emphasis on the idea of being a Christian and following Jesus was this thing that you were made to do, like humans were made for that. And the journey to finding that part of yourself is what the faith journey was all about. And so he used to say, there's nothing better than being in the moment of being around when people are discovering who they truly are. And it was his way of talking about, well, you know, other words we would use that are older, like salvation or all of these kind of things. But the idea of being present with people as they discover who they really are and discover God's will for their life, or, you know, when they match those things up, he found that really, really exciting and said there wasn't any better place to be. And that always sat with me in a certain way. And I could never let it go because I found it to be true. That's my favorite thing in life, is hanging out with, especially like teenagers who have questions about faith and the world and are on that quest. I mean, that there's just nothing better than being in that space for me.
After that 1 year, what we now call a gap year, then you went to college then that next year. And you went for 4 years straight. Is that true?
Yeah, I went for 4 years at EMC.
At EMC, Eastern Mennonite, in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Yeah.
You graduated in what year with what degrees?
Let's see. I think I graduated in 87. And I would have had a Camping Rec Youth Ministries degree and a psych minor. You know, nothing you can make any, nothing, nothing that you could really make a life out of. So,
and that was a bachelor's degree, Bachelor of Arts,
yeah,
or
yeah.
Science.
Yeah.
At what point in your life did you make this discovery or this decision that maybe ministry was the way to go? How many years later was that? And then where did you end up going to seminary? And how did you make that decision?
Yeah. Well, I would call it was a slow road of slowly. I wasn't ever one of these people who I know these kind of people exist, who kind of decide what they want to do and be, and they have this real passion for it, and they just make all of their decisions in life to make sure that that passion comes true. And I don't think I was ever like that. I was one of these that kind of wandered down the road and saw what was available. So I got out of college, and we don't need to talk about this, but I spent 3 years as a chimney sweep working with some friends who had a business. And so I was a chimney sweep
Where?
For 3 years in Harrisburg.
In Harrisburg.
Virginia, yeah. And then that was enough of an experience to say, like, yeah, I got to do something else. So, but then I ended up with MCC for 3 years in Southern Africa, came back from that. And because of, I think, the MCC experience, had enough resume clout or whatever to be able to get a job with Lancaster Mennonite Conference working with, they had like a resource center. Because of my degree in youth ministry, they hired me as the kind of the conference-wide youth person. I also worked with like a peace commission and stuff like that, but I was there for 10 years. And then it was in those 10 years that this desire, I think, for what ministry was and is, and sort of my theological thirst was really, that's where that happened, was in those 10 years being with Lancaster Conference. And it was after that that I made the jump to go to, we moved to Goshen, Indiana, and I went to AMBS.
Otherwise known as?
Well, now it's, what is it? It's Anabaptist Mennonite Seminary. Yeah.
At the time it was associated.
Yes. Yeah.
And the rest, as they say, is history. So it sounds like when you decided to get into ministry, and even before that, that working with youth really was and is still your passion. Is that true as a pastor?
Well, I'm an introvert. So here's how I measure this stuff. I'm an introvert, and I can get tired of being in crowds very quickly. I know that you and I are very different in that area. But here's what I can, what I've learned about myself is I can be in a room of teenagers and I never experience that tiredness. I don't get tired of being around a room of teenagers in the same way that I get tired of being in an adult space or something like that. So that tells me a lot about sort of why this is a good fit for me. I enjoy being around teenagers and youth. Not until I came to PMC did the whole, the younger children become sort of part of my portfolio, but that is probably one of the joys of this job, is just realizing how much fun it is to be involved with the littler kids as well. And so, yeah, it's been a blessing to be part of that stuff at Portland Mennonite.
And doing all of that in the midst of a pandemic is just a whole nother story. But let me just say that I think this church has just done an amazing job. You have done an amazing job of figuring out a way to help keep everybody, especially the youth and the children, feeling like they're an important part of the church and involved. And I'm sure there are many ways that that's happening that I don't even know about. But thank you for doing that.
Well, the little hidden secret about Portland Mennonite Church and being a youth pastor there is that all you have to do is keep opening up the doors. There are so many people willing to walk through them and be in a relationship with our kids and be in relationship with the youth. It's a church that just is, I have friends who do the same kind of work and will tell me stories of how they have to fight for their youth ministry in their church, or maybe their lead pastor isn't really on board. And the youth and the children are sort of these tag along things that they have to, that people put up with and are a source of an irritant to the adults in the church. And I have not once ever experienced that at Portland Mennonite. They are always brought into the center. They are, and a lot, you know, I give Rod a lot of credit for that, because he has set the, from when I sat down for an interview, I could tell he understood that children and youth are this energy that's a very healthy energy inside of a congregation. And he understood that that he and I matched up on this idea that in faith formation, as adults interact with kids and youth, their own faith formation gets reactivated. So it's a symbiotic, is that the word, kind of interaction. When you are interacting with little children about faith, you're also interacting with your own faith, and you're learning something. Something's becoming new, or something's becoming holy. And so separating those demographics out doesn't make any sense. Bringing them together makes all the sense in the world.
Well, thank you for all that you do for Portland Mennonite, and thank you especially for being my guest today on COVID Chronicles and giving us just a little glimpse into your amazing, interesting life.
Well, thank you, Gloria. This was fun. I'm just amazed at how much energy you brought to this whole little project. And because I'm the one that posts it a lot and it's on Podbean and all that stuff, I get little comments from people thinking that I'm the one responsible, and I get a lot of thank yous on your behalf.
And thank you, because you are the technical end of this one after all is said and done. And one of these days I'll figure that out as well. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.